Good evening and welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We are not expecting a fire alarm tonight, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors or to the door to my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers this evening. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Agenda item one, apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
No apologies have been received.
Thank you. Agenda item two, declarations of interest. Councillor Janudin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Item number eight, I'm Ward Councillor.
Thank you. Councillor Windrus.
Agenda item six, I've been lobbied. Personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Item number seven, I know a councillor who has an electric vehicle who lives in Middleton, but it's... Non-pecuniary, non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Any further? No. We'll move on to agenda item three, minutes of the meeting held on the 23rd of October. Do you agree that these are correct record? I'll move them from the chair. Councillor Shields, are you seconding? Thank you. I will now put the minutes to the vote. Thank you.
My apologies for lateness, Chairman.
Thank you. The minutes have been approved. Agenda item four is urgent business, and I have no urgent business. Agenda item five is schedule of items to be determined by committee. So we'll move on to agenda item six, which is application at Field off Hunger Hill Lane, Wimbledon. Councillor Andrews, could you just turn your microphone off, please?
Thank you, Chair. This application is for the siting of 65 timber static holiday units with decking, manager's accommodation and an office and reception static unit, together with a range of ancillary elements to that scheme. I have nothing to add to the report, and it remains as it's written, but I have had a series of late papers which I will go through with members. And the first of those is that Mr. Herbert, who is the applicant, has sought to have a deferment of the application by committee members at the forthcoming planning committee. He sees this is to enable the further time to for the following to be provided: a revised site layout, an ecology report, consultation with the Civil Aviation Authority, preparation of a unilateral undertaking that will overcome the identified legal concerns, i.e. the unilateral undertaking will include the owner of the potato store as a signatory to the legal agreement, the inclusion of safeguarding measures to prevent any users straying beyond the site, and continued discussions. There are a number of other further documents. These are totaling 19 late papers, and I don't intend to go through them ad verbatim, but I just wanted to bring to members' attention just some of the sort of key points. In relation to items 1 to 7, the applicant has sought to provide a justification of the non-existence of runway 1735, which officers feel actually it doesn't really achieve that. What it confirms is that there is a private runway, and we've had a lot of information which has already confirmed the existence of that runway. And then the further documentation is around safety considerations. It's made specific reference with regards to takeoff, but it hasn't considered landing. And what it actually does provide is in effect, rather limited parameters in terms of what would be considered in terms of aircraft safety. What he does conclude is that it's very much around pilot judgment and responsibility to be confident that in taking off it is both achievable as a safe takeoff and as a safe rejected takeoff as well. There is a diagram that is produced as the last page in, I think it's document 7, which is it's a diagram that's been produced by the applicant. But that sort of diagram has not been subject to any aeronautical evaluation. The documents numbered 8 to 13 and 17 and 18 relate to specific conditions and the details of the conditions that North Yorkshire County Council Highways Authority would seek in the event of an approval. Items 14, 15 and 16 relate to photographs provided by one of the local residents concerning the state of the road and the road conditions within the vicinity of the site. And item 19 is described as a unilateral undertaking. This document was not downloaded at the time that the application was submitted and it was not placed on public access. But the document actually isn't capable of being implemented because, firstly, a unilateral undertaking is around having a single obligant, whereas this agreement actually seeks agreement between the applicant and the district council to have works undertaken on a structure which is not within the applicant's ownership. So it's considered that document is not in effect have any weight in the sort of decision making considerations. Today I have received two pieces of further information. The first is a further return notification of the planning applications consideration at planning committee tonight, which was addressed to a Mr. Paddy Tipping. And that address was was returned from a property in Nunnington that had the same title of property. So yes, that's another Paddy Tipping response that we feel was not duly made. The second document, if I may, members, is read out. An email that we've received from Dr. Stuart Slater. He's writing it in capacity as being the director of Petrotech UK, and they utilise the runway 1735, which is adjacent to this application. And I'm just going to have a glass of water. Right. The applicant, for several months prior to our August comment, was very much aware of our 7/35 flying operation and our associated complaints over the bund and other placed obstructions affecting 1735. This is well documented. I submit that there has been sufficient opportunity since publication for our comment for the applicant and his professional advisers to consider the content which I feel adequately dealt with Aerodrome UK matters in general, and my Wombleton Aerodrome interest in particular. It included a description and plan showing runway 1735. Runway 1735 is also shown on official aeronautical charts. I arranged publication of a warning in Pooley's UK Flight Guide, the leading publication in this field, which also details our 17/35. At the earliest opportunity, my comment also includes our history of almost 50 years sole aerodrome use of 1735, based on our planning consent, during which period we have met an unbroken liability to rates based on private airfield. I affirm our previous objections and our existing justifiable prospect that at least an adequate sector of obstructing bund, now having affected the safety of our operation for over 1 year, at the northern threshold of 1735, will be subject to early enforcement proceedings for removal. Additionally, the bund constructed there, together with the additional trees planted behind, is a potential offence under Article 240 of the Air Navigation Orders 2016. I think it's meant to be in violation of which would regrettably have more significant implications than purely civil action. As a consequence, I believe that prospective removal is absolute and cannot form part of a civil bargaining stance. as officers, we would advise that the obstructions that are within the runway are not capable of being subject to enforcement action by the local planning authority, as they are, in effect, not operational development, nor are they a change of use. And that's set out in the report. However, the bunding, which surrounds the perimeter of the application site, is very much operational development. And depending on the decision that is reached by members tonight, therefore, could be capable of being subject to enforcement action, if members are so minded. The applicant has made aware to officers that he considers that a positive and proactive approach to the application consideration has not been undertaken. Officers acting on behalf of members would always strive to ensure that we respond positively and proactively with applicants, or if they employ agents, their agents, to achieve good development in the right location. However, in the spectrum of the nature of planning applications that the local planning authority receives, this application is considered to have such fundamental issues with the land use conflict on the adjacent land uses that cannot be overcome without significant modification, which at present officers are not of the view can be reasonably undertaken, and would also potentially represent a very different scheme. The applicant and the agent have had the ability to read the representation responses and concerns raised regarding the application, and only since the recommendation has been made have they sought to provide what they consider to be counter-evidence. They were also made aware of most of the issues prior to the submission of the application, and they were also advised that they could withdraw the application if they so wished. Obviously, it is for members to make their own judgments on the proposals, and there are also two speakers. So what I'd like to do now is say that I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, and I'd like to take members through the committee site photos that I've taken. I'd like to start off by giving you a sort of general sort of site overview. This is to show you the extent of Wombleton Airfield and the presence of what are actually three operational runways. There is an operational runway to the south, which I believe is 10/22, and there is also an operational runway which is operated by Swift, which runs up here. The runway 17/35 starts here and extends down, and then doglegs to the southwest and stops here, basically in alignment with the Swift flying operations. There is as part of the revisions to the application, there was a Section 278 potential agreement with the local highway authority regarding the provision of an access point, which would be just here, and there would be a public footpath extend along Hunger Hill Lane to Washbeck Lane, but then it would stop there. Obviously, within this general area, you can see the Wombleton Caravan Park that currently does exist, and this is the potato store. In a little bit more detail, this here is the potato store, and the extent of the land ownership that the applicant in effect has, it extends round, immediately around this area here, cuts round there and down, and then extends along past this belt of trees. So the application site includes this boundary along here and extending right along to the south, and then skirts along the edge of the runway. And you can see from this photo, the darker area denotes, the bund planting that's already taken place. The application then starts back up again and runs along down the south to this point, and then back up. And then it kinks back to provide the visibility display for the southern entrance to the site, which would be the vehicular entrance to the site. In terms of the adjacent land uses, I've put this document up. It's from Dr. Stewart, and it shows the extent of runway 17/35, but also the hangar and the hangar apron and the taxi area for the planes to come onto the runway. And this is it in a little bit more detail, showing the particular land use situation. This is the northern entrance to the site. It is where it is proposed that a public footpath is constructed that leads partway to the village of Wombleton. As you can see, there is already extensive trees there, which were part of the landscaping scheme of the original application for the potato store in 1994. And this is further into the site, and the potato store is very well screened at this point on the to the left of this jot. This is where the land starts to open up, and this is sort of looking in a north stroke northwest direction, heading towards, in effect, slightly towards Wombleton, but it demonstrates how open and unenclosed the land is at this point. But it also starts to show you the nature of the bunding, which is situated around the site. And in this photo, this is part of the sort of northern area of the site. And you can see when I highlight, because it isn't very clear, there is a line of trees, little saplings, that forms, in effect, the northernmost part of the boundary of the site. And it's part of the landscaped bunding that's currently in place. This photo is just at almost at the point where the sort of gravel track finishes and the runway actually starts, and that is the northern part of runway 17/35, which actually that part is within the applicant's ownership, and you'll be able to see in the centre of the shot a sort of large water tank. As you'll see from further photos, there are a number of water tanks that are placed along the runway. This is the road that leads into the area of land which is not within the applicant's control. And that building, that lovely, attractive building on the left-hand side, is the potato store. That is a little snapshot of the bunding that's in place and the sort of various saplings that are trying to be established on the site. I would say that they're not faring too well with all the weeds that are also there. This is a better shot of the runway. This is taken from the actual applicant's side of the runway, looking across in a sort of southern, southeasterly direction. And you can see there a number of the water storage tanks that have been placed down, in effect, the middle of the runway as a property demarcation. And that's the runway taken from the Petrotex side of the runway looking south. And that picture there is sort of looking eastwards towards the potato store and the existing landscaping that's been put in place. And it's taken from the point reasonably close to the hangar area where aircraft would taxi onto the runway. And that again is in effect at the northernmost extent of the runway. And it is the sort of area of bunding which raises, I think it's fair to say, the most concern for the users of the runway. This photo is taken from the runway looking in a westerly direction to give a sense of the sort of openness and exposed nature of the site. And this is actually the hangar and the apron and the sort of taxi area that is used that serves runway 1735. And it's also heavily screened and not easy to see until you actually get out onto the site. That is back on the runway looking in an easterly direction. You can see the potato store to the left-hand side. Oh, my apologies. To the left-hand side of this picture. Obviously, there is limited bunding on this particular part of the proposed site. I took that photo because that's actually a plane that is was taking off on one of the runways. Not obviously not this particular runway that's sort of associated with this application, but one of the southern runways. And this is the most southern point of the application site. And I feel that this actually represents quite strongly the sort of in effect that the site replicates the previous and existing sort of land uses that are taking place on the site. It's very geometric in its outline, and the landscape and visual impact assessment that was produced to support the application has identified deficiencies with the, in effect, existing landscaping that's been undertaken to date, and has sought to provide a sort of alternative landscaping scheme, but that would then raise further conflicts with the adjacent land user. And there's another example of the planting on the bund, just to show the sort of density of the planting and the fact that these photos were taken in, I think it was sort of late August, early September. So it is surprising that there are still the amount of trees that are based on the droughtness, you know, the drought that we had earlier on in the summer. And that's another example of the bunding as well. And it's not made up of material that is sort of would be of a suitable horticultural mix to use. It's definitely got aggregates and all manner of things in it, and Himalayan balsam has been found on the site. That's a cut through on the southernmost extent of the site, which I believe gives access into the land. This area here was used fairly recently, actually, for the Kundal sheep sale. I think it took place in late October. And this is another picture of the southern extent of the site, looking towards where the southern access is proposed. And this is the, as it stands, the current access at the southern extent, which would obviously need substantial improvements made to it. But these visibility splays have been now agreed with the local highway authority. And that previous photo, in fact, I'll go back. That previous photo is taken in a southerly direction, heading towards, in effect, Nunnington. And this is in a northerly direction, heading towards Wombleton. As you can see, the road does bend quite significantly. And this is the frontage of the potato store site, which obviously would not change in any way as part of this planning application. And here endeth the photos. Yes, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, I can't remember where I read it, but there was something, I think it was in the late papers, that said there weren't actually four of the chalets proposed directly in line with the runway. I'm looking at the plan on page 36, and I can see four chalets directly in line with the runway. So is there any explanation as to why they're there but not there?
If there is an omission, it's my fault. Yes, it should read that there is at least four in effect cabins. Yes, that would be directly in the path of the runway. If I just if I go back,
it's
Yes, the units in question would basically be in this area here of the site. So, yes, they absolutely would be sort of directly in line. So, yes, they would. I would have thought have experienced quite a bit of noise with the plane flying over. And obviously, if there was any unforeseen circumstances, such as wind turbulence or the like, yes, those cabins are 3.6 metres in height at their highest point. So, yes, that clearly does raise issues, and it's raised issues for the pilots.
I had a feeling that it was some document from the applicant. I mean, I should know where it is, but there are quite a lot of documents. But can you remember anything from the applicant saying distinctly that those four were not in line with the runway?
I haven't seen anything which explicitly states that. Obviously the there has been some modifications to the plans as a result of putting in a public footpath through the northern extent of the site, but it hasn't changed any of the orientation of those cabins, particularly in that northern sort of limb that sort of wraps around the runway. In fact it may well be more than four that you would say could be very much affected by a plane flying over.
Councillor Andrews.
I'm sure this is in the paper somewhere, but I can't find it. Wombleton Aerodrome used to be a Microlite aerodrome, didn't it? Is it still used by Microlites? And is it mainly private planes now? I presume there's no commercial use.
Yes, there's no commercial use in the sense of what would be like a licensed aerodrome, where, yes, you would have sort of, in effect, paying passengers. Swift, I was looking into their operations, and they do a lot of sort of technical sort of flying, testing their aircraft that they produce on those runways. And Petrotech, yes, it's basically a private licensed aerodrome that you need, in effect, permission to fly on. That said, it's my understanding that in the event of an emergency, it may be called upon to be used as necessary, because I noticed that in some of the material that has been produced by the applicant, there's a diagram which shows the runways of Wombleton Airfield, and it actually does describe this particular runway as being a private licensed airstrip, and that's from I believe Pooley's flight guide. But I can't substantiate it because I've not actually seen the document the source document for myself.
Okay, we'll now move on to speakers and then come back to further questions. So on behalf of the Parish Council, I have Barry Grice down to speak. Good evening. It's the large button in the centre. Thank you.
Good evening, councillors. My name's Councillor Grice, and I speak on behalf of the residents of Wombleton and the surrounding area who object to the planning application 18/00580. For reasons I will now state. Change of use. We are concerned about the proposed change of use from agricultural land. We are also concerned that there is already an existing active aviation business in close proximity to this proposed development. Traffic. The main street in Wombleton is narrow. Residents are concerned with the increased volume of traffic through this conservation village resulting from the proposed application. It is also a concern that the roads running from Wimbledon heading south towards Nunnington and Hareham already carry a large amount of farm traffic and commuter traffic. An increase of vehicles of these busy country roads could be dangerous, particularly with vehicle access turning onto the proposed site. The route to and from any surrounding facility, amusements or otherwise, would be several mile car journey, which would have a detrimental impact on the volume of traffic in the area. Light pollution. Objections have been made to Ryedale District Council with previous usage of the site. We are concerned that there would be a significant amount of light pollution that would result from this planning application, particularly through the winter months, which would have an adverse effect on business and those living close to the site and the wider area. Wildlife. The extra light and noise disturbance noise to wildlife must be considered. The landscape and scenery must also be protected. Tourism. Whilst the residents of Wimbledon understand that Ryedale District Council supports tourism and local business in Ryedale, it is felt that this particular area is an unsuitable location for the large number of static log cabins that the applicant proposes.
30 seconds left.
We feel it is out of proportion to the area and have concerns that there are already many holiday parks close by. Has the applicant demonstrated a need for the number proposed? The visual impact of so many log cabins would have a detrimental effect on this environment. To summarise, this vulnerable area is again coming under threat from industry. It is thought unsuitable for its location. This site has an agricultural business only clause, and as such, it is the wish that the village, a wish that the villagers remain it to be so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And now I have registered to speak and object to Mr. Simpson. Good evening.
My name is Ian Simpson and I'm a resident of Wimbledon. Often people will say they are not against development, but then object by saying, well, now is not the right time, or this is not the right location. However, this does not apply in this instance. My objection is not against any development of the site. I know permission has been granted in the past for alternative uses. My concerns are the safety issues raised by this particular application. Aviation. Placing cabins close to an operational aircraft runway must pose a risk to the occupants. In addition, the trees and landscaping that has been shown on the photographs may cause a risk to the aircraft. Highways. Regarding highways, there is no safe pedestrian access to the site. The site is on a national speed limit road in all directions, and there are no footpaths. The road is busy at peak times with York traffic. Locals do not walk on these roads because of the dangers. There are places where there are no verges, where the verges are not usable because of edges and drainage ditches. And there are blind bends, particularly on the road to Wimbledon. The proposals outlined in the application fall short of Wimbledon. They actually terminate at Washbeck, which is about half a mile away from the centre of Wimbledon. My third area is noise pollution. The report points out that should this development go ahead, that noise from the potato shed would exceed planning practice guidelines. I urge members to accept the officer report and refuse this application and insist on the remediation of the unacceptable bungs and landscaping that has already taken place. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just like to reiterate that in terms of the traffic considerations, NYCC, Local Highways Authority, do consider that in principle the development is acceptable. I, as an officer, though, do feel that in terms of the public footpath, whilst highways have said that it's acceptable, I think that it is less than desirable to have a public footpath that simply stops at a junction and then doesn't continue, because for the users of that public footpath, there is that expectation that, particularly if they are perhaps taking up more road than, say, a single person, if they're walking a dog, if they've got a toddler on reins, if they're in a wheelchair, they will take up more of the road and they will be less able to, in effect, get off the road. So I do sympathise that the proposals for the footpath, I think, do fall far short of what we would expect as part of SP20 and the development plan, which does seek to ensure that there is access for all. In relation to the light issue, we feel that that could be considered through a condition, and that's all I really wanted to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for the officer? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Can I refer to the water tanks on the runway, on the boundary? Is that a normal way of delineating ownership?
No, it's not. It's obviously very much a sort of unacceptable sort of situation for the operators of the runway. But because of the fact that they are physically manoeuvrable, they don't constitute operational development, and in effect they are not actually, strictly speaking, changing the use of the land, although they are obviously preventing the owners of the runway from legitimately utilising it as they have the right to do so. So it is a very much a less than satisfactory situation for them, and I think that sort of going forward, in any event, they will have to sort of seek to sort of take action regarding this, because obviously, as I was saying earlier, pilots are very much responsible for their safety and the safety of others, and they have to make very serious, calculated judgments around whether or not it's safe to fly, and they consider that, based on the current situation, they are not prepared to fly, and they have not done so for a year.
Councillor Andrews.
Just coming back to microlights, I seem to remember years and years ago there was an application to use Wombleton Airfield or part of it for microlights, and there was a restriction on when it could be used, and because there was concerns by local residents that it was going to cause a lot of noise. If we have a development with a lot of holiday chalets next to a runway, do you think that's going to be a concern?
I would say that in terms of the proximity of the land uses, very much so. As it stands, Wombleton Airfield operates without, as far as I'm aware, any concerns in terms of the levels of noise that are generated through the aircraft movements. But of course, if you then decide to position sensitive receptors, i.e. people who are expecting a very quiet, rural noise environment to be in, and background levels of noise will be very, very low. If you then have a plane either landing or taking off, and in some cases it will be literally a few metres away from you, that would I consider to, raise amenity issues.
Councillor Shields.
Do we know how many aircraft there are likely to use the runways throughout the year? Is there any specific list of people who do go up and fly these microlights?
I'm not aware of a list. What I would say is, though, that it will be probably very hard to identify a list because and the frequency by which planes would sort of take off and land, because it will not only be a sort of function of pilot sort of intent to fly, but it will also be a function of the atmospheric conditions at the time and whether or not it would be even capable of taking flight. So you could have a sort of idealised list of who potentially would be either using the runway or taking off, but the reality might be different. So it's not easy to establish how many planes would fly, say, on a day or on a week or even within a year. My understanding is that pilots can utilise the runway from, you know, flying in from other airfields, but it has to be through a prior agreement made to allow that to happen, so that there is an awareness that planes are in effect coming in, so there's no conflict between the different planes.
Sorry again. So is there no list anywhere? Is there no sort of HQ where they've got a list of the people who might use the runways during the course of a year? You know, the ones who are actually based there and flying out, you can't obviously determine what might come in. But is there no list? So do we have an idea of the frequency that these runways are used? Because I think it's quite important.
We don't have details of the precise sort of nature of how frequently the runway has been used. I mean, that said, based on last year, runway 1735, according to Dr. Stuart Slater, it hasn't been used. So, because they don't consider it to be safe to be used at the moment. I'm sure that officers could ask Petrotech if they can provide details of who has, you know, in the past utilised the runway. But when I was out on site, there was a plane that was taking off, not on this particular runway, but to the south. I would say it's probably quite hard to establish conclusively how many times it would be used. But we can ask.
Any further questions for the officer? No, we shall then move into debate. Councillor Windrus is local to the area, not actually the ward member. Would you like to take this one?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think I'm going to move for this application to be deferred, whether or not any of the issues can be resolved in the next month. I very much doubt, but I'll move deferral anyway.
Councillor Carey.
I'll second that, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for deferral, so I will take that to the vote. We'll take that to the vote, Councillor Clark.
Before you do.
No, it's been moved and seconded for deferral, so I'm going to take that to the vote. Thank you. The application has been deferred. For the members of the public, I believe it will be the expectation that application will come back to the December committee meeting. Thank you. We shall move on to agenda item 7. I'll just give members of the public a moment to change as well as officers. So we'll move on to agenda item 7, which is application at Middleton Service Station, Main Street, Middleton. And Alan's going to take this one for us.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 7 relates to a planning application for alterations and additions to Middleton Service Station, including the replacement of the forecourt canopy, shop fronts, underground tanks and pump islands. There's no updates to the report as published, with the exception of the additional conditions and informatives as recommended by the environmental health specialists, which were included in the late observations. Those conditions relate to noise management and hours of construction work. I will run through a number of slides just showing photos of the site and just describe the existing situation and the proposal. So, first of all, this is an aerial photo just showing the existing situation. You can see on the western side of the garage is the detached residential property known as the Grange. This is the objection to the application. The main building in the centre, the front third of that, is the shop, convenience store, that serves, which is ancillary to the petrol station. You can make out the existing canopy, which is approximately, it has a clearance of 3.2 metres and is 125 square metres in area. And you can also make out the two access points off the A170, that they would be unchanged. You can also see on the aerial photo the front garden area to the north of the Grange, and also the rear principal garden at the back of the site. To the back of the main building, I've pointed out the garage store, which is to be demolished, and to the south of that is the existing jet wash. In this location would be three new jet washes, two jet washes and an area to clean cars. This next photo is facing southwest towards the site across the A170. You can see the relationship and the close proximity between the residential property and the main garage building. You can also see the areas that are used for parking at the moment on the right-hand side and actually at the front, and also the totem sign, which is due to be relocated further towards the building as part of the highway's requirements. This is a close-up just to show the position of the residential property in relation to the main building. The two vehicles in the centre are vehicles owned by the occupant of the residential property. The report does make reference to the concerns about access, but it makes it clear that that's a civil matter to be resolved between landowners. What you can see on the side of the garage building is just beyond the electric, the overhead line, are vent pipes, and as part of the application they are due to be relocated to the other side of the building away from the residential property. This is a close-up of the shop front, which is due to be refurbished and updated. The position of the entrance to the store would be unchanged. It would be on the right hand side of the building as you look towards it. This shows the existing canopy and the arrangement of the pump islands. At the moment there's two pump islands. That would be increased to four. The number of fuel dispensers would be unchanged. It would remain at four dispensers. The intention is that the layout would improve circulation of vehicles, make it easier for pedestrians to manoeuvre safely across the site, and it would also allow for the free flow of vehicles through the site, reducing congestion and waiting time. This photo is taken facing back towards the residential property, and it just shows that an existing outdoor eating area adjacent to the shop entrance. As part of the amendments to the application, it's been agreed with the applicant that the picnic benches and the outdoor eating area would be removed and wouldn't be provided within the site. This is in response to concerns from the local residents in relation to loss of privacy and proximity to their property. This photo is taken from within the front garden, just to illustrate the existing boundary treatment facing towards the garage forecourt. There is a good level of screening, and also this is obviously at the front of the property, so levels of privacy aren't what you'd expect within the rear garden. This photo, again facing towards the canopy, it might be able to make out on the photo just below the O on SO, is actually some collision damage on the existing canopy. It does have a sign below that that says maximum height of 3.2 metres, so the new canopy would be larger and higher than existing. This photo is facing towards the entrance to the garage, and just to point out, on the right hand side is the high speed fuel pump for HGVs, the blue pump, which would be removed, and the applicant doesn't intend to provide this service to HGV drivers. This photo is taken at the rear of the site, and it shows the garage store to be demolished, and on the right hand side there's a red tank which is the diesel storage tank, and then further to the right is the boundary fence, or to the rear of the Grange. On the left hand side is the existing jet wash, and this is roughly the area where the new jet wash would be installed. The new jet washes would have screen walls that are almost 3 metres in height, glazed screens that would contain any spray arising from cleaning of vehicles. And then just finally, this is a photo taken within the rear garden of the Grange, just to illustrate the good levels of privacy and screening provided in this area. Just beyond the fence is actually a caravan owned by the occupants of the property. On the left-hand side, the boundary nearest the garage building, there's a good level of screening provided by existing planting. Yep, so just in terms of, just to summarise the main points in the report as published, in terms of the principle of the development, obviously it's an existing established use comprising a garage filling station and shop. So the impacts that are being considered are those arising from the additions and alterations over and above the existing impact. The principle of the development is acceptable, and it's also noted that it would safeguard existing employment at the site. In terms of the design and visual impact, there would be no change to the general appearance of the site and the building. It's acknowledged that there would be a larger and taller canopy, but the scheme has been amended to reduce what was considered to be an overbearing impact and visual intrusion for the neighbour. Further amendments include the removal of the outdoor eating area, relocation of the HGV fuel delivery point so that it's further from the nearest residential property, and relocation of the above ground vent pipes. In terms of the impact on amenity, it's detailed within the report the concerns that have been raised and the steps that have been taken by the applicant to address those concerns. It's considered that the proposed redevelopment, remediation and modernisation, including the new forecourt layout and alterations that reposition certain elements of the operation, would improve the situation for both users of the filling station and the occupant of the nearest property. It's not anticipated that the proposal as amended would give rise to any unacceptable visual intrusion, overbearing presence, loss of light or loss of privacy. Conditions would be imposed to restrict hours of use, contamination, requirement for remediation works. We'd secure details of the jet wash equipment, and also there would be a noise management plan and restrictions on external lighting. With regard to the highway's impact, there'll be no change to existing access arrangements, and it's been confirmed that the visibility displays can be provided and there are no issues in terms of highway capacity. In addition, the HGV pump would be removed. The new pump island layout would increase from 2 to 4 and would provide for a better flow of customer traffic through the site and a more efficient dispensing of fuel with reduced vehicle waiting time and congestion on site. It's considered that this would also improve the layout for pedestrian movement and the safety in terms of circulation routes and entry and exit points from the site. Conditions would be imposed in relation to parking, prevention of mud on the highways and securing clear visibility at the front of the site at all times. In conclusion, it's considered that the proposed redevelopment, including the remediation works, would modernise the site, improve the layout, which would allow for a more efficient and safe operation of the filling station. In addition, existing jobs would be secured in the long term and short-term employment would be created during the construction phase. It's considered that the development would not have an unacceptable impact on the appearance of the site, residential amenity, the water environment or highway safety, and it is therefore recommended that permission is granted subject to the 20 conditions as listed in the report.
Thank you. We do have a speaker on this application, but just for clarification, conditions 19 and 20 are on your additional papers, members, not on the actual report. We do have a speaker, which is the applicant, Mr. Richardson. Good evening.
I would like to begin by thanking members for the opportunity to address you today. I am Joseph Richardson, Managing Director of Joss Richardson & Son Limited, the owner and operator of Middleton Service Station, and the applicant in respect of the redevelopment proposals which are before you this evening. Joss Richardson & Son Limited is a family-owned fuel and retail business, and we operate 6 sites across North and East Yorkshire. Middleton Service Station is our most recent acquisition, having been purchased in April of this year. The site was acquired with the express intention that it was in urgent need of modernisation and improvement to meet the needs of customers, staff and the local area that it serves. The view was shared by the previous owner. We have worked carefully with the local planning authority together with the statutory consultees and have taken on board the views of the owners of the adjacent residential property to arrive at a proposal which delivers a significantly improved facility which is safer, more efficient and more visually appealing. Importantly, it will secure the future of the existing employment at the site and the long-term successful operation of the service station. The redevelopment is designed to ensure the impact of the service station on the amenity of the neighbouring property is minimised and indeed resolves many of the difficulties that they had previously made. For example, the parking arrangements are better formalised and the outdoor seating area, as already mentioned, is to be removed. As a business, we are very proud of our track record in delivering and operating high-quality redevelopments across our network of sites, having won many awards for these developments. We are supportive of the local communities within which we operate, and by applying our experience and hands-on approach at Middleton Service Station, we are certain we can provide another excellent facility. I respectfully request that, having carefully considered the proposals, you agree with the officer's recommendation to approve the planning application. I will be happy to answer any questions if needed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do members have any questions for the officer? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Through you, Chair, is there any reason not to condition the provision of an electric vehicle charging point, probably a fast charging point, within a specified period of time? I don't know whether that would be 1 year or 2 years, but it strikes me that this would be the ideal time when the whole site is being redeveloped, because as we just heard from the applicant, he wants to meet the needs of customers, and I suspect that electric vehicle charging is certainly going to be a future requirement.
I think on that point, the inclusion of that in the application, it would fall to the applicant. to impose a condition, we would need to demonstrate that it would be required to make the development acceptable. And I think the permission that would, that if it was granted, it wouldn't prohibit the future installation of such a unit. And there are permitted development rights for those. Off the top of my head, I don't know the specifics, but it wouldn't remove the opportunity in future for that to be installed.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chair. On page 82, the Parish Council raised considerations about wastewater, water control, and various other matters relating to water. And on page 64, you've referred to things that the Yorkshire Water have said they would require. Are the officers satisfied that those concerns of the Parish Council are actually covered by what the water company are requiring in terms and conditions?
Yes, and in response to the Parish Council's concern was the wastewater arising from the jet wash. The applicant has confirmed that it would link to existing drainage arrangements, and in terms of protecting the groundwater conditions in terms of the construction environmental management plan, and also conditions imposed by the Environment Agency should secure the protection of the water environment.
Has that been, are the Parish Council aware of this, and have they commented at all?
The Parish Council haven't been sent a copy of the conditions.
Are there any further questions for the officer? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. the HGV fuel station, is it, well, I maybe missed it, but where was it going to be moved to?
The existing HGV pump would be removed entirely from the site, so they wouldn't provide for HGV high-speed fuel dispensing.
So there's no provision for HGVs at all? Thank you.
Any further questions? No. We shall move into debate. We don't have the local member, but as Councillor Potter is local to the area, perhaps he might be kind enough to take this on.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'd certainly like to think that the applicant would be happy to look at the provision of an electric vehicle charging point, particularly if it can be confirmed that that will come under permitted development. I have had a comment about existing problems when exiting the station on the northwesterly side from the existing totem thing, the one that's got the prices on. But I was pleased to hear that I was going to be relocated. So certainly with the conditions that the highways have put on it, I'd like to think that the sight lines will be kept completely clear. And I think in terms of the application as a whole, I don't foresee any great problems, and I can quite happily go with the officer's recommendation and move that it be accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I'd like to second Councillor Potter's motion. The provision of electric charging, I think, is a commercial decision, but I would certainly hope that as time goes on, that will be a provision that the business would like to provide. But in the meantime, I'm happy to support the proposal for approval.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? No, it's been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote. That application has been approved. We shall now move on to agenda item 8, which is the application at Joiners House, Main Street, Wintringham. Now, Jill's taking this one for us.
Thank you, Chairman. The Joiners House, Wintringham, is a semi-detached property, roughly in the middle of the village, on the southern side of the settlement. It's within the development limits and the conservation area. The proposal, just so I can get that to work. It's not. No, it isn't. Oh, yeah. So that's Joiners House there. The proposal is for a two-storey side extension to form a self-contained residential annex. It also includes the erection of two timber-clad outbuildings, which you can just see through the gap beyond the gates. That's a retrospective element of the application. The two outbuildings have actually been erected and are on site. Members will be aware from reading the officer report that the main considerations really relate to the proposed uses themselves, the design and scale of the extension, the annex, and the impact on the conservation area, and the impact on the residential amenity of neighbours. On the whole, those considerations reflect some of the issues that have been raised by the parish council and by neighbours in consultation responses. Just so that you're aware of the neighbours, because we refer constantly to property addresses. It's my understanding that the old post office, the occupants of the old post office, that's that property there, which is attached to Joiners House. Dovetail House is this property here, and the old smithy is a property further to the east on the other side of Dovetail House. The late pages, there are some further responses, five altogether, I think, from neighbours and the parish council. They have been received in response to a reconsultation for the scheme. The scheme was amended to delete a balcony at the rear of the proposed extension. And also there've been, those comments have been received following the release of the agenda. So obviously people are aware of the potential, the conditions that Alan, the case officer, has proposed. Members have the late pages, so I'm not going to go in much detail, but just as a quick précis of the position, the residents of the old post office seem to feel that the condition to obscure glaze a window that would have faced their property would resolve some of their privacy issues, but they're continuing to object to the application in support of the neighbours, the occupants of Dovetail House. The occupants of Dovetail House again have reiterated previous concerns. They have said that they would prefer obscure glazing on the elevation of the proposed elevation that would face them. They would be looking for a condition to require the applicant to show some consideration when parking vehicles. Particularly, I understand that the applicant has a camper van or a travelling or a commercial vehicle that is sometimes parked behind the gates between the two properties. They've also asked that we use a condition to explicitly prevent a balcony being built in the future. They've reiterated some concerns about overlooking from decking in the back garden and have suggested a landscaping scheme. The parish council have reiterated previous concerns, and they have felt that in order to mitigate impact, obscure glazing is needed on the elevation facing Dovetail House, and a reduction in the height of the outbuildings should take place. I just need to quickly draw your attention to some of the plans that were prepared as part of the late pages. I had the agent for the applicant on the phone this afternoon, who was a little bit concerned that his plans have been reproduced without his consent. He's not too concerned about that, but he would just like to make members of the committee aware that the annotations on those plans aren't his work. So the proposed landscaping scheme and things aren't actually his. They've just been used as a basis just for some of the residents to make their points. So just a quick series of photographs, really, just to so members can orientate themselves. The proposal is a two-storey extension to Joiner's Cottage. Currently, there is a single-storey side extension, and the proposal is to replace that with a two-storey one. The width of the proposed extension won't be any greater than that current single-storey building, 4 metres. It'll be approximately 11 metres in depth, so going back into the site, and about 8.2 metres high to the ridge. It's an annex accommodation, which is effectively an upside-down sort of arrangement with living and kitchen area on the first floor and a bedroom and ensuite on the ground floor. Just to the rear of the property, that's one of the outbuildings, again, timber-clad outbuilding, and that's the second one, which is further to the south of the site, away from the house. You can just see the single-storey element of the scheme there, which will be replaced by the two-storey extension. I'm sorry, but this little dot is not working very well. And they're the two outbuildings. I think just in terms of the proposed uses, clearly they have raised some concerns. The building is proposed as an annex, and it's whilst it is self-contained, it has its own front door. It does share a curtilage. It will continue to share a curtilage with the property and an access. And I think that, you know, we're suggesting a condition that would make sure that is a relationship which is retained. I would just like to point out that I think this sort of accommodation, annex accommodation, is something which we are going to see increasing demand for in the future. That's a combination of really as a result of house prices in Rydale and also long-term care for the elderly. As far as I'm aware, this annex has been proposed in order to allow the current occupants to reside in the annex so that their son and family can move into the house. I think it's in that respect, it is something which is meeting a form of housing requirement, of housing need, which is, I think, a material consideration, particularly in Rydale. Similarly, the outbuildings, they are proposed as domestic outbuildings incidental to the enjoyment of the dwelling house, and it's proposed that they're conditioned as such. The design of the scheme, and I think the plans are included in are appended to the report. The design of the scheme very much follows the sorts of things that we would be looking for. It's set back, it's set down, still subservient to the host dwelling. So I think in terms of design principles, we find that arrangement acceptable. There are some concerns that it is development which doesn't sit well within the conservation area. So the next few slides are just to give you an idea of the sorts of properties that are in the conservation area within Wintering. Very much a mixed selection of house types and styles and ages, really. So there we have single-storey properties, traditional cottages. There are some terraced dwellings there. This is actually Joiner's House and the old post office, so Victorian-type age. We've got buildings that are more recent, sort of 60s, 70s-type development, and also other buildings with cross-wing extensions. So there really is a combination of building styles, building ages. And I think within that respect, the proposed design of the scheme is certainly not going to have a detrimental effect on the conservation area. I think it's very much a neutral effect, and that really the character and appearance of the conservation area would be preserved as a result of the proposal, and that clearly is a key test for us in design terms. The next few slides really to highlight the relationship with adjacent properties, and really in terms of the sort of the residential amenity issues that the scheme throws up. Clearly, this is going to be where the extension will be built, coming out to approximately between those two windows there on that single-storey outbuilding. So there are potential implications for privacy implications for residents on both sides. On the first floor of the proposed extension, there is a window overlooking the eastern elevation. Potential privacy issues for the adjoining resident in the post office. The case officer has suggested obscure glaze to that window, which would resolve that issue. On the western elevation of the proposed extension, there are two. It's proposed to have two openings on the ground floor and one opening on the first floor. Very much secondary windows to the spaces within the building. The case officer hasn't suggested that there is a condition to obscure glaze those openings, but I do feel that there is a potential for overlooking of this kitchen window to Dovetail House, and I think. I think on balance, we, if members are minded to approve the application, we should look to condition those openings as obscure glazed. It's always a difficult relationship when you have windows in flank elevations of properties that look onto each other. But I think that certainly is the safest way of addressing any overlooking and privacy issues or any perception of overlooking. That's just the relationship with the old post office on the other side. I'll just come back to those photographs in a minute. The other issue around privacy is potentially overlooking a garden space. I think that photograph highlights that even under the current existing arrangement, there is some indivisibility between properties and back garden spaces. There will be views from the window in the rear elevations of both properties, Joiner's House, and the box dormer window in the old post office that has some views into surrounding gardens. And there was concern, I think, and there is concern, that the proposed Juliet balcony in the rear of the annex extension would increase overlooking. I don't think it would increase it to any significant extent over and above that which currently exists. I think there is also, not in any of the photographs that are here, but certainly in some of the photographs that were sent in with the late pages, a photograph with the a window in the rear elevation of this section of Dovetail House, which actually is a closer is closer to the boundary and the garden of this property than the Juliet balcony would actually be. I think if I could just go back, I think it's going to let me. Issue in terms of neighbouring amenity is the impact that the proposed extension, the proposed annex might have on the residents of Dovetail House in terms of two main issues really, in terms of their outlook and any potential loss of daylight. This is their view from their kitchen window. Clearly, the outlook is very much dominated by the existing fence between the properties. I mean, I think that fence is there. It exists to, in some respects, to protect the amenities of the applicant's property. The outlook is the fence, and it is the brick wall of the existing property. In many respects, that's not going to change. That you can see from the photograph that's the single story outbuilding. So I think it's certainly not going to come any closer to that window. It's an outlook which is going to be very similar. I think there will the distance between the properties amounts to about 5.8 metres. There will still be some light that gets to that window. I don't think the extension is positioned so close to the boundary of Dovetail House that it would significantly reduce light levels. And just in terms of the next photograph, just to highlight that kitchen does have another light source. So I think in some respects we don't expect there to be unacceptable impact in terms of the effect of lighting to that room. In terms of the... Can you even buy the rules again? All right. Sorry. Yeah, but this should work. Yeah. I think finally, the other concerns that have been raised relate to the impact, mainly the visual impact of the outbuildings from the amenity space of the occupants of Dovetail House. I think we take the view that the outbuildings are still domestic in scale. They are close to the boundary and some landscaping regrettably has been removed. The applicant is aware that we would be conditioning, if my members are reminded to approve the application, we would make it a condition that a landscaping scheme is implemented, which would help to soften and to some extent screen those buildings. But they are at a distance from the main dwelling and again are, as I say, domestic in scale and proportion. I think the issues raised, yes, they're visible. They are built form. They're not soft. They're not vegetation. They are a built form. But that the issue really that has been raised is something which I think we feel really relates to a private view rather than buildings which are of such a scale that they're creating any form of sort of overbearing impact on the neighbour. And I think just I've put this slide in at the end because it just sort of I think reinforces the relationship between the properties. There is concern from the applicants of Dovetail House about the visual impact of the outbuildings. That is the view from the applicant's site towards Dovetail House. I think if we were to say as a planning authority the visual impact of the outbuildings were unacceptable, I think that would be a very difficult position to sustain, given that we've agreed that scheme historically and felt that was didn't have an unacceptable impact. So that's just something for members to bear in mind in considering the issues that have been raised as part of the application. Chairman, if I could just quickly move on to a couple of the other issues that have been raised in the late papers. There has been some concern about the camper van parking in front of the kitchen window of Dovetail House. That camper van is parked on the applicant's driveway. Historically, that's always been their driveway. I think it's not a reasonable position for us to try and restrict where they park that van. Also in terms of a request for a condition that prevents a balcony being built in the future. If in the future the applicant decides they want a balcony, they would have to apply for permission, and I think that's the time at which we consider that. I think if we were to try and condition this application to say that a balcony couldn't be erected in the future, we would fail the condition test. It's clearly not necessary because that's not what's being applied for at the moment. Chairman, I think there are all of the issues. They've been outlined in the report and they're covered in the late pages. The recommendation is as outlined, but I would say that it would be with an additional condition that the obscure glazes the openings on the western elevation of the proposed extension. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there... we have no speakers, so we'll go straight to questions to officers. Is there any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick, beg your pardon.
Jill, thank you very much for that. Very comprehensive. Can I just clarify, did you intimate that you thought you might want obscure glazing on the Juliet balcony?
No, sorry, not the Juliet balcony. On the
just on the flank.
On the flank elevations.
Councillor Maud.
The one outbuildings at the back, intention is that they will live in there, and there are a younger family in the house. This place at the back, does it need planning before they actually start to live in there, or is it all ready for them to move in, and does it have wheelchair access?
Sorry, just to be clear, the outbuildings at the back are for they're buildings which are sort of incidental to the enjoyment of the dwelling house. The annex accommodation is not proposed. The outbuildings aren't proposed to be the annex accommodation. They're a garden shed. I think one is used as a bit of a, I probably shouldn't use the term, but a bit of a man shed. The annex is the proposed extension to the property. So obviously, clearly, that would have to be built before they could.
Councillor Potter.
All right, thank you, Chair. I think man cave is the correct terminology, but we won't worry. Yeah, I've got a couple of questions here. Can I just be absolutely clear that if there was a requirement or if they wanted to build a proper balcony in the future, that would have to come through planning permission?
Yes, it would.
Right, thank you. Is there any obscure glass to any of the overlooking windows in the adjacent properties? Because I'm aware, particularly on that property, that's a relatively new one, so there was obviously no conditions about obscure glass in the various overlooking windows then.
The first floor windows, I believe, are windows to bathroom accommodation. I think they are obscure glazed. The kitchen window isn't obscure glazed. I'm not sure of the reason why it wasn't normally. We would always try to avoid situations where you've got windows on the ground floor of flank elevations that are either not obscure glazed or where a fence doesn't cover them completely. Historically, I don't know the reasons why that currently exists, but yes, I think there are some that are obscure glazed, just not that kitchen window.
Right, thanks, Jill. The other thing I wanted to ask, the history, it's not particularly clear, and I did ring up yesterday, but Alan wasn't around, so Bridget, is he on leave or something? Yeah, that's why. It says planning permission refused in 2007 for the erection of a single-storey extension. Do we know why?
I'm afraid I don't. I don't have the details of it. I can find out.
Right. I think that covers it. And again, 2009, planning permission granted for the erection of an extension. Is that the sort of side thing, or was the extension not built?
off the top of my head, I don't know. I'd have to check the planning history.
Thank you. Councillor Daniel Dean, you had a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chairman. The outbuilding, it's quite close to the fence. Now, if I'm correct, you can plant trees up to about 2 metres. Anything above 2 metres would require planning permission, wouldn't it?
Not to plant trees. In terms of the height of a fence, there are arrangements. I mean, in terms of where those outbuildings sit at the minute, just to give members a bit of context, they trigger the need for planning permission. They're not permitted development. But for example, the newer building, the building with the veranda, I think if that were moved about 0.7 metres further into the applicant's site, it wouldn't need planning permission. It would be permitted development even at the height it's at. So, it's fractions really in terms of what can be achieved through permitted development and what needs planning permission.
Thank you. I mean, I think my thought process was if you can actually you already mentioned it, by softening the impact, and whether you could plant trees there that were perhaps 3 or 4 metres high, that would actually screen off, whether that would actually appease the neighbours and bring some sort of resolution.
Well, there isn't there's no restrictions in terms of planting and planning permission. The applicant is aware that we would be conditioning the application to include the need for a landscaping plan. So clearly, when that comes in, we would be looking at a scheme that provides quite a comprehensive scheme that helps to soften those buildings. Yeah.
Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
Just two questions. First of all, as regards the balcony, you can't condition it. Is there a possibility of putting an informative on it? I do have another question after that. Was an informative help?
It's just to make the point, at the minute the application doesn't propose a balcony. So I think it would be unreasonable of us to try and impose a condition where it's not necessary because the scheme doesn't propose it.
I'm not suggesting a condition, I'm suggesting an informative. So if there's a subsequent application, then reference can be made to that informative.
We can make the applicant aware that if they come back in the future for proposals for a balcony, it would need planning permission.
My second question, it's just about the character of the conservation area. I mean, I go through Winterton quite a lot, and the impression I get is it's an area with it is a combination of styles, but there's a predominant whitewash house style, and then in regard to the other houses, in fact, this aren't in the whitewash area. They tend to be very nicely spaced apart, and I'm just wondering to what extent that forms the character of the conservation area, and to what extent this extension might infringe that.
I think there are a number of elements that contribute to that particular conservation area. I think certainly the general alignment of properties, so it tends to be frontage development along the road, some immediately against the road, some set back. I think another strong element of the character of the conservation area are long back gardens down to, certainly on that side, down to the beck and beyond. In terms of the buildings, as I said, I think there is a real mix of building styles and ages. I think you're right. One of the very noticeable features of the conservation area that is very apparent are the whitewash buildings, the estate properties. I wouldn't say they're necessarily a dominant element, but they're certainly a very noticeable element of the conservation area. And I think spaces between buildings are important, but I don't think there is necessarily, and this is partly a reflection of the age and styles of properties, I don't think there's necessarily a particular uniformity to the spaces between the buildings. What the proposal does is still retain that gap between the two properties, and that's mainly because the access arrangements into the rear garden will still be retained.
Thank you, Jill. I've just got a question. Would it be advantageous or excessive to remove permitted development rights from the site, in your opinion?
I think we'd have to specify which permitted development rights we would want to take away.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I'm a little bit confused because I didn't think you had a huge amount of permitted development rights in a conservation area.
They are restricted, but you still have them. Yeah.
Any further questions? No, we'll move into debate. And the ward member is Councillor Jean-Yudin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think subject to the conditions of putting obscure glass in on the side of the property, on the development, and a comprehensive landscaping to soften the impact of the outbuildings, I would support the officer's recommendation of providing planning permission.
Thank you. Councillor Nob.
Yeah, I would second that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I do have concerns about altering the size of our existing housing stock, but I appreciate that that is a function of the current broken housing market and it's not really going to change. So that, I don't believe, comes into my decision. Something that I thought was particularly appropriate on page 85, it says the local plan strategy requires extensions to properties to be sympathetic and appropriate in terms of the scale, design and materials. Consequently, I find it difficult to see what the objections are about, especially considering that the adjacent properties both seem to have very similar scaled extensions to either side. So I'm afraid I just can't really understand, other than not wanting things to change, exactly what the problems are. And all I can see this doing is causing conflict between neighbours, which isn't really necessary. It's far better to get on well with your neighbours. So, yes, I shall quite happily support this. Thank you.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. It's just a general yes, I can support the officer's recommendation. Councillor Potter raises an issue with regard to extended accommodation for probably elderly people who you want to support in their twilight years, and certainly North Yorkshire County Council, as a dual hatted member, are considering, as a joint scrutiny of health and care and independence, the fact that we should actually be making it part of the national planning policy framework to put these kind of extensions in place so that support for elderly relatives can be provided within the family.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews.
I have to say, Chair, I have some concerns about the mass of this development. I mean, I'm not sure how many bedrooms there are there, but what happens is when you put extensions on, you just increase the number of bedrooms, and a three-bedroomed house becomes a four-bedroomed house, a four-bedroomed house becomes a five-bedroomed house. And what you're doing is you're reducing the stock at the lower end of the housing market. I'm not particularly happy with the mass of this development. I'm not very happy about its position, so I don't think I can support it.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for approval with the additional condition with regards to obscure glazing, so I will now put that to the vote. Thank you. That application has been approved. We shall now move on to agenda item 9, which is the appointment of members for the Tree Preservation Order Working Party. I believe historically this is a three-member panel.
That's right, Madam Chairman.
Is there anything you wish to add, Jill?
No, only that we would need the working party to meet in December, as the recommendations would need to come back to planning committee in January at the latest in terms of the provisional orders.
I think usually the chair of planning sits on that committee.
That's correct, and two others.
Two others. Do we have any nominations? Councillor Hope, did you indicate?
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Can you nominate yourself? Can I nominate myself?
Well, I don't see why not.
Go on then, I will do. I'd like to do that. Thank you.
Councillor Goodrick.
Yes, Chair. I'm happy to second Councillor Hope's nomination and nominate Councillor Cleary.
Thank you. Bear with me while I write this all down. Cleary. Councillor Andrews. Sorry, can you just put your microphone on?
I think this is a shared situation. It's not really a sensible idea to have all the members of the working party from one political party.
I'd like to point out that Councillor Hope is not of the same party as Councillor Cleary. And it is a non-political committee that we are sitting on. Councillor Maud.
I'd like to second Councillor Shields. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, Councillor Jean Yadim.
I was going to say I'll second Councillor Cleary.
Thank you. Bear with me a moment. In consultation with Jill, I've decided that all four of us will sit on the... OK. There are no restrictions. Okay. Agenda item 10 is any of the business, which there isn't any. Sorry, I better just go back to agenda item 9 and say I'm presuming officers will be in contact with some dates for us.
That's right, we'll try and get that done as soon as possible. Yeah.
Agenda item 11 is list of applications determined under delegated powers. They do make an interesting read. And agenda item 12 is appeals. Jill, is there anything you wish to say on those?
No, not a lot, other than the Motherby appeal was of interest to us, because clearly the inspector did take into account the emerging sites document in coming to her conclusions.
Thank you, Jill. I'd like to thank you all for attending. I'll now close the meeting and wish you all a safe journey home. Thank you.